right, we are live with Terry and Gary's Low Expectations Podcast. We got Terry eating something, flexing for the fans, and we have Big Bang Mike Olasky today. How's it going, Mike?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing excellent. Excellent. Thank you. So what do you got going on back there? You going to work out for us? Or,
thanks for having me.
We got a little bit of a delay with you, so it's going to take a...
Oh, yeah. Do you remember? Yeah. It's all right. We'll hit the pause for just a second so that we can hear everything. But I can, if you guys want like a dramatic interpretation of my training's like, that's what you want for this whole thing.
Gary's always into the dramatic stuff, you know?
Well, yeah. You don't have those tight shorts on, so I don't think you're going to work out today.
Right. That's why I hang out with me.
That is true. He knocked the shorts early.
So we want to get right into it. Mike, what is this thing with you and Blake Foster, and why are you going to beat up the Blue Power Ranger?
Oh, man, I love it. We're jumping right into it. That's awesome. Those who don't know, Big Bang Mike Olasky is fighting the last original Red Ranger, is fighting the Blue Turbo Ranger in a real mixed martial arts fight, no hold barred arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, hopefully in January, COVID permitting. That's what's going down. And the whole thing came about where, honestly, what happened was I jokingly put out there, because I knew that Jason David Frank, the original Green Ranger / White Ranger / several Rangers in the whole franchise, he was an MMA fighter. So I just kind of did a joke post on Instagram of like me versus Jason David Frank, who would win? And then, Blake Foster has been a friend of mine since we were kids. We were in the acting scene together. We looked similar and we did martial arts. So we did a lot of the same auditions. We hung out a lot of auditions together. And he just messaged me and he was like, hey, I heard you call it Jason David Frank. He's like, I'm down to fight if you want. And I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, let's do
all female athletes.
I mean, we're not real friends unless you punch each other in the mouth, right?
Right.
So how many fights has Blake actually had? Is he actually active in MMA, or is it just something he wants to do?
Blake is not active on the MMA circuit. He has a similar background as Stephen Wonderboy Thompson of UFC fame. He has a full contact karate background. And he's a blue belt in mixed martial arts. So this is kind of a new thing for him that he's branching over and something that he wants to do. He was a world champion sort of like, five or six times over in his past as far as like that competition karate scene goes. And he's looking to bridge that gap into MMA, I think. And I think he thinks that I'm good cannon fodder to beat for the first time so that he can break into it. And you know what? I'm just a brick wall. Oh, I'm gonna stand there in the shoulder and knock him out cold.
So, go ahead.
Now, go ahead, Gary.
I'm gonna share this real quick. Go ahead.
Oh, when you said friends punch each other in the mouth. Every time I see Gary, he just pulls back and socks me right in the mouth. He says he does it because he loves me, but after 10
no, it makes good sense.
Times.
I mean, it's a friend when they give you the front of the hand instead of the back of the hand, right? You get the back hand, then you have issues. But if you get the front of the hand, you guys are simpatico. You guys are good.
Right. Well, Gary, we have issues because he's always backhanding me. and he verbally assaults me too. See, all this time I thought it was a friendly. Now, thanks for pointing that out. The backhand is
sweet. Yeah, thanks, sweet Mike. Distinction, right? Backhand is disrespect. Front hand means I respect.
I'll switch it up a little for you.
Right. Thanks, Gary. So, go ahead, Gary. What was your question?
Well, I don't know if you know Terry, but Mike was in a movie with one of your favorite all-time wrestlers.
Who's that?
Hulk Hogan.
Really?
Yeah,
what movie?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Is he finding this out, like, right now?
Right now. It's, like, live, boom, drop down right here.
Look at that. I love that reaction. He was like, oh, shit. Right, really?
I'm curious.
Tell him, Mike.
To be fair, at that time, he was Hollywood Hulk Hogan, so I'm not sure if that kind of, like, slows its steam down a little, like NWO years. But
Yeah, NWO, I was an adult. I was kind of, When he did turn heel, it kind of hurt my feelings. But anyways. How was he on the set? Was he pretty cool?
Yeah, I mean, Hulk was the best. I mean, I think he was really in tune with like his position and his iconography. And he knew what people thought of him and how much kids respected him. Right. I think him doing Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain was part of that, like, aspect of, like, going full heel, like you were talking about with NWO, but also, like, keeping that clean enough image to where he could go back to the Hulkster, you know, whenever he wanted. So, yeah, he starred with me in Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain. Mm-hmm. And he starred as a character, Dave Dragon, who was the leader of the Star Force 5, which was pretty much a Power Rangers knockoff, which is kind of funny and probably why I got casted in the movie anyways. But it was super fun, and he was a super cool guy.
Now, when did you first get contacted for becoming a Power Ranger?
When it comes to Power Rangers, there was like a series of auditions to kind of like find the right person to play that part. You know, it wasn't necessarily that we were contacted, but we like submitted our headshots and you know, I happened to look like have the right martial arts talent and everything like that. You know, back in the early 90s, the best way, in my opinion, to get into the acting business was just to be super good at martial arts. And as an 11-year-old, I was a 6-time world jiu-jitsu throwing champion and karate firms champion several times over. So when that happens, people start coming up to you and they're like, you should get into acting. You should get into acting. Right. I eventually got an agent and they submitted me for Power Rangers. We went on a few auditions and boom, Last Original Ranger, and probably the most important series in the franchise, because my series definitely helped bridge the gap for a wider world of Power Rangers, and 28 seasons later, they're still going strong. So
right.
You said you were 11-year-old at the time. Were you a Power Ranger fan when you got the role, or was it something that you just heard?
Yeah, that's a very good observation. One of the fun things about having been on Power Rangers in the time that I was on Power Rangers, at the age that I was on Power Rangers, was that the whole series was pretty much marketed to me. So I watched it. You know, I was a martial arts nut, you know, since I could walk. Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, Sammo Hung, everything that you can give me, I consume martial arts wise. And that's the reason why I got started in martial arts to begin with. And when Power Rangers came on, you know, I definitely watched the first two seasons stoked out of my mind. And then when to be on the Power Rangers in the third season with like the original command center and everything, it took all my childhood willpower to just not run around and punch buttons until everything broke.
Were you was that always the goal as a kid? You and your parents, I'm sure, talked about it, to be an actor, or was it, did you want to pursue your career more in martial arts?
You know, I don't think we sat down. I mean, when you're 11 year old, you don't really sit down and map out your life.
You don't?
But I think, yeah, I know. No, that's not a thing that happens. I think that my father was a Green Beret in the military. So when it really came down to it, it's just his only born son was going to know how to fight, and he was going to know how to fight well. And that's where it started. And I was born in Hawaii on a military base there, and we started martial arts there. And then we moved to California. And that's when I started winning all of these tournaments and everything. And that's when people started approaching my dad. It was like, hey, you should get acting. So I don't think he got me started in martial arts with like the idea that I was going to be an actor. It's just something that by happenstance ended up coming to fruition, just because of, you know, when you've worked that hard and you become that talented at something, especially at that age, you're in a pretty unique position. And there's not a lot of people that can do what you can do. So businesses come and they're like, hey, why don't you get into this? And if you look at the bulk of my career, whether it be Power Rangers or Power Rangers, pretty much everything I've done in the entertainment business has been, you know, martial arts or related to martial arts by some kind of transient property, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you think you're kind of typecast in that, or is that just something that you just prefer to do then?
I mean, typecast is a strong word. I think when I think about typecast, I think about people who are looking to break out of something. Okay. I've had a lot of dramatic work outside of martial arts. But, you know, honestly, my love for martial arts has been longer than my marriage, longer than, you know, my love for anything else. So if I were typecasted as a martial artist, I don't think I would necessarily bemoan that. I think that martial arts definitely gives me a push through the group that perhaps other actors don't have. And, you know, you can have two people that are equally as great actors, but if this guy is super talented physically, then he gets the leg up and he gets the part. And I think that's just what ended up happening with all of my parts. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. I don't think typecast is a bad thing. I think it just, you know, it's just right. that's your wheelhouse as far as you're such a good martial artist and being that time, like you said, all those movies came out around that time with, you know, martial arts kids and stuff. So
I think I mean, if that's your definition, then definitely, yeah, being typecast in that kind of role. I mean, I was one of the many, yet still the few go-to kids who you can kind of bank on to not only act and be able to do martial arts, which is a good role to be in, especially in the early 90s.
Right.
Yeah. Now, because you have that background with martial arts and all that, do you do a lot of your own stunts, or will they not allow you to do stunts, or do they cast someone like yourself so you can do the stunts and you know, there's less editing or what have you, you know?
That's a really good question. You know, when it comes...
Hey, Michael, not to interrupt you, but just so you know, I ask all the good questions. Gary doesn't.
He's our expert journalist.
Fair enough.
Rhino,
I love when
you
said
I'll defer to you.
Wait till he asks you how you think if John Stamos is hot or not.
Yeah. Come on, let's not get into that.
Okay, I'll wait for that one. That'll be a good one.
So go ahead as far as
doing your own stunts. I feel like you know, the idea of doing your own stunts for in the beginning when it came out in the early 90s, I think people had this assumption that doing your own stunts meant that you were literally doing everything. But I think now there's a good distinction in the industry between doing your own and doing your own fight scenes. Few people have the power and the clout to be able to do their stunts. Basically, if you're not Tom Cruise, you don't have the choice whether to do your own stunts or not, because there's so much money involved in movies and so much insurance and you know, different entities. You know, if let's say on the set of Three Ninjas, I broke my ankle or something and I can't act anymore, basically production's halted and all that money just evaporates, right?
Correct.
So as far as doing your own stunts go, most actors don't do all their own stunts. What the best that they could say is they do their own fight scenes. And that's what I did. I do my own fight scenes. Okay. And whatever stunts the stunt coordinator and the whole crew deem safe enough for me to actually do myself, I will do. But, you know, there's a whole industry of stunt men, stunt women, stunt people, right, who are here to do that stuff for you. And who did some of the stunts that were more dangerous to make sure that production doesn't halt. Convoluted answer to that question.
No, it doesn't mean that you can't do it. It's a lot of times they won't allow you because of the simple fact that, like you said, if you twisted an ankle, broken ankle, production, you know, comes to a halt, and that costs a lot of money, you know. So yeah. So the fight scenes, you know,
exactly.
That's definitely, and that's kind of what I meant as far as stunts. I just worded. See, it was a good question, but I really. Really dropped the ball on that, Gary.
Good question. Vague wording. That's true, right? So basically anything that that an actor can potentially hurt themselves with too gravely, they'll defer to a stunt person, because not to knock the stunt industry, because they're the littlest people in the world. Most of my family comes from the stunt industry. But, you know, the stunt people are more expendable than the actors, because if a stunt person breaks their leg, you know, they'll get it repaired and everything will be good to go. But if an actor does, there's no real replacing them if you have like 2 months worth of footage with this guy's face.
Right, right, right.
What Terry really wanted to know was, where do you find 11-year-old stuntmen?
Fun fact, they cast little people. Okay. Right. I think my stuntman on Three Ninjas was a 5-foot-tall Thai man by the name of Tang, and he was just a beast, man. That guy would just like flip up a storm just out of nowhere. I'm like, how are you doing a backflip without gearing up for everything? You just be start standing and then just like backflip and stand again. I was like, jeez, I'm never gonna get that good.
So, since you were started off such a young age, when did you know that, wow, this is what I want to do? Kind of like, did you get the acting bug to where you wanted to keep pursuing it?
Or martial arts?
Or martial arts, yeah.
I think I was always going to be a martial artist. There was never a point in my life where, at least a memory in my life, where I wasn't martial art. When I wasn't a martial artist, my dad told me that, I learned to kick before I can learn to speak. So I always knew that that was going to be in my life. As far as acting goes, I didn't see myself moving into acting as a serious endeavor outside of action films. All through my childhood and my teenage year, I wanted to just be Jean-Claude Van Damme. I wanted to be Arnold Schwarzenegger. I wanted to be Jackie Chan, you know, all of those guys, Jet Li, you name it. It was only until my early 20s where I started to really take acting seriously as a craft in the way that I took martial arts seriously as a craft. And I think that's when I actually got the bug of like, oh man, this is like a serious thing that you need to practice. You can't just lean on your martial arts as a crutch. You actually have to like treat this as a craft itself. And that's when I started studying the Meisner method, the Chekhov method, going to theater classes and stuff like that. And that's what it became really fun. And now, you know, I'm at that age where it's really fun to meld the serious martial artist with the serious actor, and we get to play and have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I noticed somebody missing from that list. Rhino's favorite martial artist, Steven Seagal, wasn't on that list that you looked up to.
Oh, Stevie! Yeah, Steven's super fun. I actually work with a company called Cold Steel Knives, who have a whole line through Steven Seagal, and he's a cool guy. I went down to his place in Arizona recently. Nice dude.
Oh, cool. Hey, I watch your videos. You're entertaining as hell, and I love watching your weaponry demonstrations. So when you're not being sarcastic and and funny, you're being really serious with all the different knives and batons and all the stuff that you do with, nunchucks. And where does that come from?
It's funny because when you follow me on social media, you have a lot of like satire and you have a lot of like acting and a little bit of like wit. But on the other hand, you also have that sprinkled in with like mixed martial arts and like serious weapons display. When I was a kid, I grew up on a martial arts form circuit. Back then, like now as an adult, I call it, and an MMA fighter, I call it Chinese cheerleading. But it's basically musical forms, and you did it to like weapons and created these combat scenes and competed against other kids. It's not my cup of tea so much anymore, but it's definitely helped me have a vast understanding of like weapons, different weapons, and then how they work as far as like tricks go. And then I met my mentors, Ron Balicki and Diane Inosano, of Bruce Lee fame, after Three Ninjas, and they taught me kind of combative styles of weapons, swords, sticks, and all that stuff. And so now we're like, in my adulthood, we're melding those two aspects together where it's fun to kind of like talk about how real world weapons work, but it's also fun to kind of flip them around and have fun with them. And that's kind of the juxtaposition you get when you follow me on social media, is that, you know, I'll be an idiot actor, but also a very serious martial artist.
Well, I didn't know who would get.
You get that lane division. we get a lot of fun followers.
Yeah, I imagine.
Now, when you say idiot actor and then serious martial artist, is it more of a personality, having fun with it, opposed to, you know, just being an idiot, you know, and to attract? Because I feel when you're entertaining and, you know, and maybe a little goofier, being an idiot, you draw more people in. Because if you're serious all the time, you're only going to get that small niche. So do you think, you know, that's why you do it, more or less to draw more people in and keep it entertaining? And, you know, because like if you remember when The Rock was doing a lot of his promos in the late 90s, he was saying some funny stuff,
right?
You know, might have been a little goofy, but he was so entertaining. And that's why him and Mick Foley had the highest rated segment on WWE in the history, you know. So is that why you kind of mix that stuff in?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's important to be entertaining and to not take yourself too lightly. Because I do, I mean, I'm a consummate fan of martial artists and fighters, and I feel like often they take themselves very seriously. Right. You know what? That's good for them. If that's the best way that they could put their best foot forward, that's awesome. But for me, you know, I think that there's other sides me than just being, you know, I'll joke about, you know, beating Blake Foster on the ground, putting him his back so fast that, you know, quicker than a Mormon girl on her wedding night. Like, that's always fun. Not it in me. But there's also that other side where it's like, you know, I also want to comment on things. I want to have fun and I want to not take myself so seriously. So there's right, like right. That duality, the yin and yang of the martial arts that goes through things.
Right, right.
Now, did you grow up a wrestling fan?
I'm sorry.
Did you grow up a wrestling fan at all? Did you watch wrestling
when
you
were going? Yeah, so I wasn't a huge wrestling fan. Were gigantic. So whenever I'd go over their house, we'd watch all of like the events and WrestleManias, I remember, were a big thing, and dialing it on a rotary phone for pay-per-view style. Like, I remember all of that stuff. Right. Most of my interest, because I got started in acting so young in wrestling, was from a martial arts perspective. Like I said, I have a big catch wrestling background. I have a big shoot wrestling background. And both of those martial arts styles, my grappling lineage, is deeply embedded in that pro wrestling or worked wrestling style. So I have a deep reverence for that aspect. I've never done it myself, but I am talking to my good friend Josh Barnett, who runs Bloodsport, which is a really hard-hitting, independent wrestling kind of league, about maybe going back to my roots and taking a couple slaps to the face, front hand, not backhand.
Right. I was just going to say, make sure they're front, not back.
So, as far as your MMA background goes, I see you were a 3 or 4 time champion. What's that? You have different MMA divisions that you've been in, your championships?
Yeah, so I think as of that last fight, I'm a 5-time mixed martial arts champion in 2 different weight classes. So I have 1 lightweight championship and 4 welterweight championships. When it comes to the Blake Foster fight, I'm going to be adding a light heavyweight championship to that docket. So we're going to be a six-time MMA champion. So that's kind of like my experience in mixed martial arts. I got started a little late in the game. Most of my fights were with the same venue here, Steel Fist in the state of Utah. And, I did pretty good. I eventually became the number 1 ranked mixed martial arts fighter in the state of Utah, ranked 3 at the top of my game on the West Coast.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize how that sport's just very difficult, you know. I mean, the training that goes behind it, plus all the other stuff you do, you know, people just think, and you know, with pro wrestling too, you know, they just see the finished product, a lot like mixed martial arts. They don't see everything that goes into it, and especially the preparation for mixed martial arts, it's just so much, you know, you're preparing for a fight and then a different fighter and all that stuff. So there's a lot of preparation in it. It's not just, oh, that you just sign up with this league or that league. It's just a lot of, and it's so hard hitting too. So it's one of those things where it's the difficulties, if you really take time and look into what you and other people have to go through just to get ready for a fight in a match. And, you know, it's just, it's insane. It's totally insane, you know.
Agreed. One of the legs up that I had coming into the MMA world was coming in from a perspective of theater and stage in Hollywood, because I understood that ultimately what you guys are providing, win or lose, is about entertainment. And I think that's why I got a lot of fights, and that's why I got a lot of re-signs and attempts to like go for the titles and stuff like that. It's just because it's all about that finished product, right? If you watch an MMA match, a lot of people just look at the cage and they think that that's what it is. If you watch a wrestling match, they look at the ring and think that that's what it is. If you watch a theater performance, you watch your play and you think that that's just what it is. But a lot of people don't understand that there's like, you know, a good year or 6 months leading up to that entire process. Me coming into this, recognizing that fact, I think I had the opportunity to take it a lot more seriously a lot earlier than most of my competitions, which kind of gave me a leg up.
Right, right.
I think you'd make a good wrestler. What do you think, Terry?
Oh, for sure.
He's got
sure.
the charisma. He's got the look. Yeah.
He can.
What's my name as a wrestler, guys? Is it the same as my fight name? Do I just come in?
Big Bang Mike.
Is Big Bang?
Big Bang Mike, that's what you get.
I think that works.
I like it. You just,
signature move? Come up with a signature move right now.
Oh, geez. Well, the spear is taken and the gore, so. You know what? A top rope elbow hasn't been done in a long time. Macho Man, Randy Savage, top rope elbow.
What do we call it? What do we call it? How do we Big Bang that?
Big Bang.
I don't know.
Top rope elbow.
The Big Banger.
What is it?
Well, you're
yeah, the Big Banger.
Your Big Banger. Put him in the reverse DDT or something.
Here he goes. There's your improv. Come on, man.
See?
Well, you can't take
the backhand.
Right. You can't take the backhand. That's scary.
The Big Bang backhand.
That's it.
I like to see him like
Gang backhand. I like it.
Gary just looks at me and says, I got to keep this strong.
Oh, that would be awesome, dude. Ken Shamrock's like an idol.
We just had him on a couple weeks ago. He's such a good dude.
Yeah, he's awesome.
You get to go.
Oh, that's awesome. I don't think I've ever – I think I've seen him in person, but I don't think I've ever met him in person.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a really good dude, really down to earth and stuff like that. He works with Impact Wrestling. That's where I'm at now. And, you know, every time I see him, we just talk.
Okay.
And, you know, you learn stuff from him, you know, because I pick his brain about the MMA fighting, you know, UFC. And all these other things. What did you do, Gary?
I was done. Sorry. I just said goodbye, Big Bang.
Oh, there he is.
We're moving on. Oh, there he is.
Yeah, he just shut me off. I got a phone call. Right, I didn't even know that that's what happened. I guess I will put that on my disturb mode in the future.
Right.
Sorry, guys. Yeah,
we're used to people just leaving. They're like, oh, what is this?
Hopefully you're with me.
We're out. You're frozen. So we're going to give you a second to unfreeze. Still there?
We always do this. Hey, you want to talk about where people can find us?
I don't know if you can hear me. I'm just getting like blips.
I can hear you, but we can only see you like posing.
Right. Yeah, we can hear you, Mike.
Well, we're going to talk about the...
Oh, there he is.
Oh, there he is.
Looks like I'm back.
There you go. There we go. You are back.
Apparently, you get a phone call, just kicks you straight off this thing.
You're the first one that left and came back.
I just run away. I was thinking about getting my grappling dummy and just putting my clothes on it, just setting it up in front and just like running away.
It took us a while to figure it out.
Yeah, it would. I'm not that entertaining. You can see. If a grappling dummy could take my place.
That's your stunt double.
That's exactly it. Well, you have to be a lot shorter and Asian, but yeah.
You know, A couple things before we talk about where people can find you. As far as now, do you do a lot of signings and stuff? I know a lot of Power Rangers, because they're in such demand, you know, and autographs and meeting your favorite Power Ranger and stuff like that, because you're a big part of, like, wrestling, you know, you're a big part of someone's childhood, and even, you know, the parents that watch it with their kids. And do you find that rewarding when, you know, people come up to you and get their autograph, picture, whatever, or have you sign some stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly humbling. And I got into, like, the whole Comic-Con scene probably, like, not much more than 2 years ago. And I honestly didn't know how big the fandom was for Power Rangers and how big the fandom was for Three Ninjas until I actually started going to these cons. And, you know, gosh, you'd be surprised at how many people come up to me and they're like, dude, my name is Colt. My name is Colton because my mom loved Three Ninjas so much. So basically, I'm named after you. And, like, I see tattoos of, like, Colt masks and Power Ranger helmets. And it's so humbling and so fun. I love every second of it.
Yeah. Every year, Power Rangers is still one of the most requested guests for us. And we're in year 8, and it hasn't changed one bit. Every year, Power Rangers is right up there.
Yeah. So, exactly. We have I don't know what it is about that fan base, but, like, they love who they love, and they want to see them, and they want to see them over and over again, which is
right. We've had Cardenas twice already, and it's awesome having the Power Rangers there. So we'll get Big Bang.
Yeah, Mike and there. You know, the whole, you have to eventually, right?
Eventually, I mean, if you ever have a
there's only so many of us.
There's a lot of you.
I know, right?
I get bombarded every year, and I was like, oh my god.
I mean, that sounds like the fan base.
We were finally going to have Blake this year. It's taken several years to finally get him down here. It's always been scheduling conflicts. We only bring one or two in a year, so I mean, we're not going to have a Power Morphicon, so we're going to have a couple each year. And then COVID came, and now we're not having anything, so we're having a virtual con.
Still have me, Gary.
Yeah, dude.
Huh?
No, you virtual con, Gary.
I always have you.
Right. I'm like a rat that always pops up.
That's a friend you slap with the front of your hand.
Right. We're working up to that.
Gary tries to get rid of me, but I always pop up out of nowhere. Hey, Gary.
I'm surprised you haven't pulled in yet.
Right.
we were going to preface this next question with a video, but we have a lot of low expectations here on this show, so we didn't have a video to provide. But the video of you fighting, I think you won a championship that fight, and then you pulled a ring out of somewhere and proposed to your wife. Can you walk us through that?
Oh yeah, that's probably like one of my first videos to have ever gone viral. So basically, my wife, my girlfriend at the time, this fighting for the welterweight championship. So what we did is we got all of our friends and family to come to the fight and, you know, just stack the crowd in my favor. And we ended up hiding the ring surreptitiously. And after I won that welterweight title and got belted, I did the whole knee thing. I mean, when she came in, she was, you know, I was like, I want to thank my wife for all her love and support. And I was like, oh man, but I think he knocked loose a tooth. And I dig into my mouth and I pull out the engagement ring, and you can find that online. It's a fun little video of a MMA fighter. Basically, like, I'm a pirate. I won a belt and I took a bride. It's just kind of how it goes.
Fighting and pillaging. Yeah, I didn't know where you had that ring. That's me out the first time I saw it. I was like, did he fight with that ring in his mouth?
Right, the whole time. We did a sweet little magic trick as one of my corner men, as they took my mouth guard out, they put the ring in so I could do that little bit. So, you know, unfortunately I want to fight with the ring in my mouth, but the athletic commission was like, well, that's not legal. And like, we want to help you. But no.
It's like, well, I was going to propose to you, but I swallowed the ring, so. We have to wait a couple hours. Right.
Exactly. So will you marry me? And then tomorrow we'll go fishing. That's less romantic.
Hey, Mike, it's been a blast having you on, brother. I appreciate you coming on. Can you tell the fans where they can find you?
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. So thank you for having me on. Yeah. I mean, I pretty much have a way to look me up on any social media site except for OnlyFans, unless you want me to open up OnlyFans. I'm just saying, I could do some scandalous stuff if you guys want. But yeah,
I stopped subscribing. So,
it's her fault. I'm on Instagram at @BigBangMike_, TikTok @BigBangMike, Twitter @BigBangMike_, Facebook, facebook.com/@BigBangMike. I mean, just Google me, you'll find it.
I'm there.
Well, Gary's always the one sending me messages late at night.
Oh, super sweet.
All right, Mike. You can hang out if you want, work out in the background. I don't care what, you know, if you want to just lurk in the bag. We're going to talk a little bit about next week's show and what we got coming up with the virtual pop fest. But you're more than welcome to hang out, or if you want to leave, you can.
Right, sweet.
You understand.
I'm gonna have to take off. But it was a pleasure talking to you guys, and thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks,
thank you again, Mike.
We'll talk soon. All right.
Yeah, he was a cool dude, man. Very entertaining.
Fun stuff. And next week's guests, we have Mad Magazine editor, Simpsons, Futurama, Disney artist, Bill Morrison. Mm-hmm. And that's right. Going to tie into we have a virtual pop fest coming up since we can't have the in-person pop fest. So he's going to be one of our guests at that virtual pop fest. So I want to make sure we got him on. And along with Bill Morrison next week, we have Dave Santia from Art and Soul Art. He's one of the world's most renowned speed painters, and he's going to do a painting for us, Terry, live.
Right.
And he's going to donate the painting to us to auction off.
And we're going to auction it off. Yep. And what's it going to go towards? Tell me, Gary.
With Terry and Gary Charities is going to do a fundraiser for smoke and carbon monoxide detectors. So
exactly, and that's something that you and I both talked about, and we've already got someone from New York area donated $125. Your insurance agent donated $200. And where are they from? What's his name?
Star from Star Insurance Agent here in Monroe.
Right. So if you want
to look my insurance agent is Mark Durrett. So I don't want to get that confused because Mark Durrett's a big sponsor for our shows.
Okay. My bad. Right. I really screwed that one up.
You know? That's what happens. We don't rehearse.
right. We're live, baby. So, no, but we're going to start whether a Facebook or a GoFundMe or something, PayPal, where people can donate. And then all the money, 100% of it, goes to buying smoke and carbon monoxide detectors and batteries. And then we're going to distribute them to the fire departments, fire stations, and people can go pick them up. And then really encourage people to check the batteries, change the batteries, and you know, make sure they have smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors, because definitely want to save a life, you know, or more.
Oh yeah, it's a good cause, and it's something that I think just goes on the under, you know, underutilized every year as far as getting those
up. Right. And sometimes you hear people bringing awareness to it, and you know, and it's so easy to just forget to check the battery or to buy one. You know, and I recommend having one in each bedroom, and definitely not the kitchen, because if you cook like I cook, it's going to be going off all the time. So, but like front rooms and stuff, you know, it's definitely, and carbon monoxide detectors, stuff like that is just so easily overlooked, and keeping up on the batteries. So they say change the batteries, don't check it, change the batteries when you set your clocks ahead and when it, you know, you set the clocks behind an hour. So in the spring and fall, that's usually if you keep it around that time, because sometimes they'll start beeping, but you might be out of the house when it's beeping, and then you come home and it's the battery's dead. So, you know, a lot of people might wait until it starts beeping, but it's always good to be proactive on that.
In our house, when it beeps, we take the batteries out.
Right.
Because it's so damn annoying. I'm going to start beeping at 1 or 2 in the morning.
Right. I'm guilty. That's why it's always good to have extra batteries, the square ones in your house. So you can.
I just figured.
Mine started beeping at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, I should just take it out because I got a couple more. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to change it right now.
Rip that sucker out of the wall. If I can't make it through the rest of the night, then so be it. Yeah. Right. If anybody wants to donate, you can message us or inbox us and let us know. We can give you the link or something to donate. I wanted to talk real quick that on the 19th, instead of our regular con, we're having the virtual con. It's going to be Bill Morrison. It's going to be Art the Clown, our friend David Howard Thornton from The Terrifier. He's going to be there. Stuart Sager, Dirk Manning, and 10 o'clock till 8 o'clock, nothing but live people selling their wares, their art, their comics, their toys. We're going to have a panel on 8-bit gaming and a bunch of fun stuff. So you guys check it out. I want to thank Dave Phillips of Podcast Detroit for helping us set that up and for what he does for us every week. So thank you, Dave.
Yeah, no worries. Happy to help, man.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, Dave, I'll be honest with you. If you didn't have that great-looking bar.
Make sure to check us out every week here on Terry and Gary's Low Expectation Podcast on Facebook, on Podcast Detroit. We'll be up on our YouTube page, Terry and Gary TV, as well as Spotify, iHeart Radio, iTunes, and whatever else you get your podcast at. So thanks, and we will see you guys next week.